remembered to hit record. We do have pages set up, but it would be good to have links to those pages, or actually even just move the pages under this feature discussion section to have a consistent place for people to go for that stuff. So I'm going to paste the link in the IRC, but if you're just browsing, it's under the FC repo wiki. Several of them right now are in the dev space, and we're really trying to migrate those over to the FC repo space under feature discussion. So if you are authoring one of those pages, it would be good to just move it and make it over to chat here. So this is the page I'm talking about. That's sort of the target page. I have a I'll go ahead and hit my other items in the roundtable section just as we go through each person, but I'll let Steve take it from here. So Steve, would you be able to just give a little overview for folks who weren't able to make last week's discussion?
Yeah, sure. Basically what we talked about was breaking the release up into milestones. So essentially having pretty much three weekly chunks of work, scheduling items, pieces of development into a milestone, making sure that each of those items has got someone assigned against it, both for doing the work and testing. And then come the end of the milestone, seeing where we got to and closing those off, and then scheduling the next milestone. Essentially doing the scheduling just for a milestone at a time, and doing that based on the current view of priorities of the outstanding items. So in brief, that's it. So, I mean, anyone who wasn't around last week, any comments or questions about the basic approach?
So this approach is described on that release timetable page that's linked off of the agenda, too.
Yeah, I'll just pop that in. Right, you just beat me to it. Okay. Since last week, I went through, based on comments and feedback from last week, I've added a milestone workflow to that as an idea of how that might actually work in practice with Jira. I'm not sure, maybe someone knows. Can we actually have a hierarchical version structure so we could actually break the 3.4 version into separate milestones? Or would we need a custom field for that sort of thing?
Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head. Dan, do you happen to know?
I don't know on the top of my head either, but it's certainly possible to find out.
That would be great.
I can't imagine that there'd be any difficulty in breaking things into milestones.
Yeah. I think I recall seeing one project, maybe it was Sakai, in their Jira, that they had basically just used the version field but made milestones actual versions in there. So there wasn't any structure to it. It was just the name of the version indicated that it was a milestone.
Well, I guess, I mean, in terms of terminology, we're kind of using milestone. I mean, what one would normally have releases within, you know, bigger milestones, wouldn't one? What we're really talking about is kind of almost like iterations or something like that.
Yeah, so it's certainly possible to add a custom field if we want to go that road, too. I've had a little experience in doing that. Help get that set up.
So in conceptually, as long as we can break things up by release, i.e. 3.4, and then milestones, what we'd essentially do is assign to the 3.4 Fedora release all of the issues we're intending putting in that release. And then as we come to work on a milestone, review everything that's open by priority that's not been fixed already, and add those to the next milestone based on priority. As I say, assign people to those ask people to assign themselves to those, I should say, and make sure we've got testers for those. And then at the end of the milestone, we'd go through and make sure that everything that's completed has actually been tested and that's marked as completed. And anything we haven't managed to actually put in that milestone gets moved back into the Fedora 3.4 bucket, basically for prioritizing again and working on the next milestone. So does that make sense as an approach? Do people think that would work? Okay.
Yeah, it does to me. As I mentioned just before the call, we could, I mean, I guess there's a couple ways to do it if we want to move the for things that don't fit in 3.4, but we want to eventually do. One is to leave the version undecided, and another is to actually create a Fedora 4.0.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can do either one.
Possibly a combination. I think we've probably got a good idea of some things that will go into 4.0 and some things that are just, you know, we're not sure about for now.
Yeah. Well, I'll make sure that we have a Fedora 4.0 in the list of versions.
Okay. That's great.
So we have that.
Okay. And another thing we had an idea of doing was to actually put an availability timetable up at a fairly basic level. So basically on a weekly basis from now until the final release date, by committer, a table essentially indicating how many days you got per week, in your opinion, to work on the release. And then what we can do is basically total that up by milestone. And when we look at the scheduling and who's assigned to the task, we can just basically have a check and say, you know, does the number of issues assigned to you and the testing that's to be done, does that look as though it's going to fit within your calendar? Just to kind of help us from an overall sort of scheduling point of view. And we can also use that to see if we've got any problems with the proposed dates on that page at the moment, whether we should shift things around based on holidays and stuff, if there's any particular bad times. So I shall look at doing that basically over the next week.
So we should just report in our available time at each committer meeting, or do you expect us to update it ourselves?
What would be good is if it could be updated by yourselves, just basically given an initial review and maybe on a milestone basis, just update it, you know, every few weeks to give a current view of time you think you'll have available. Providing everyone's happy with doing that.
Sounds good enough.
Okay. Well, any questions or comments, obviously, let me know. So, Chris, I guess the next thing is the tracker review, essentially.
Okay.
Moving towards scheduling the first milestone.
Yep. So last week we just talked a little bit about the tracker, and I mentioned that before we start trying to point ourselves and or too many of us and potentially the wider community at some of the items and voting on them, that it would be good to do an initial sweep and make sure that some of those items that have been in there for a while or that we know are no longer relevant, to get the duplication out of there. So we're not asking people to look at a huge list. And I was able to make some good progress on that. Could certainly use some help with that to try to finish it up this week. But I don't know if folks who's signed up to the Fedora tracking mailing list, but certainly had quite a little flurry of activity in the last hour. But it was good. I was able to go through quite a few of the issues that were kind of stale and close them as won't fix or add some relevant comments. I figure I'm through about, actually I should paste the link here. Because in the meeting notes, I believe, yeah, there is a link right from the meeting notes. Let's see. If you go to that list for tracker review, pasting it right now, that's actually sorted in according to the number. If you click on unresolved issues under first pass, the issues will actually be sorted according to when they were submitted. So I just started walking through it in this order. And I got down to near the bottom of the first page. So there's quite a set still to go through. And I think I'll just put it out there that if anybody wants to help and kick in on this process, it would be real helpful. But please coordinate with me so we're not doing necessarily the same thing.
I'll try and set aside half a day later this week, actually, to do that. Is there a good time of when you think you might be finished so that I'm not kind of going through the same stuff?
Well, what I was thinking was maybe if you, Steve, were working on it, maybe starting from the other end.
Okay. Yeah.
And then as we progress, maybe we could just mark off on that wiki page what we got to, you know.
Sure.
With the range that we got through. So I'll actually update that right away and just indicate the range that I've covered. But yeah, I think for me at least, this is going to take a few different sessions of sitting down for an hour or so and plugging through some of the issues. But
and I think if we could keep a list of things that we think we should bring to the group for further discussion, that would be good.
And on that note, I actually have a couple. It seems like we'll probably have some time here at the end in the roundtable section. I thought maybe I'd just ping people on a couple that I came up with during that. But just as a general process thing, maybe, adding those items to that wiki page under that section would be good, just so we have them all listed in one place, things that need some discussion. And then I guess in general, last week, you know, we talked about a couple main things we want to do. One is actually scope items for 3-4 from this big list. And we can individually go in, and you can even do this now if you already know some of the issues that you're associated with. Make sure that those issues are marked as 3-4. But at some point we'll be sort of reviewing these issues based on community input too. So we'll be sending out a request for folks in the community to kind of get involved in this process by voting on issues, and then we can take a look at what people have voted on and made comments on to help with the scoping there. All that action needs to probably start. I don't know if the schedule, Steve, I think you did mention which date you wanted to send that message out, right? I think it was about a week from now.
Yeah, I think we wanted to basically send it out, I think basically around the week of Friday the 12th, towards the end of that week. Just have a look. So around the sort of 15th, 16th, because then we theoretically should have got, you know, everything into the 3.4 release that our candidates. So we could ask, you know, the community to feedback on things that we already think are in that release and get, you know, votes in to help with prioritization.
Yep. Okay, that's the process, right? So we're making the scoping decisions on 3-4, and then they're voting just to help us with the prioritization. Although, I guess some of that might, you know, if we see a lot of noise about a particular issue, maybe that makes us think a little differently about whether something goes in 3-4 or not. But especially if anybody's willing to contribute. Okay. That covers that section for me, at least. Steve, did you have anything else on the 3-4 process?
I don't think so at this stage. Let me just quickly check. No, I think, you know, just finding out how we can manage the process within Gyra in terms of, I had got one outstanding item. And that's basically, if we finished a milestone, but some items are still actually not completed, my gut feel was we just move them straight into the next milestone rather than move them back into kind of a prioritization process. If there's already work being done on that, unless anyone's got any strong thoughts on that.
Yeah. I guess, is that like versus upping the prioritization just because they slipped? Or?
Yeah, I don't mean slipped. I mean, if you basically started something but not had a chance to complete it by the end of the milestone, technically speaking, I guess, you know, you should really prioritize it based on the other items. But, you know, it's obviously awkward if you already worked on something to stop work on that and work on something else. So my gut feeling is it just slips straight into the next milestone.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, in a formal agile process at the beginning of the milestone, you do at least a small planning action.
So maybe the default becomes, yeah, move it into the next milestone, but, you know, still it's a conscious decision.
Yeah, it would be a conscious kind of closing off one milestone and then, as Dan says, planning the next milestone based on priorities of outstanding items.
Makes sense to me.
Okay.
All right, shall we move into the roundtable section? So, Steve, I assume that covers your update, right?
Pretty much. I still have the Vesel Zakamal policies as first-class objects. Outstanding and not yet. I had hoped to finish it off by now, but that hasn't happened for various reasons. So that's going to get some priority over the next week or two as well.
Okay.
And I do actually have a couple of questions on that, which I'd like to bring to a call, but not this one.
Okay. I'm just going to go through the list here and see if folks have stuff to say. Asger, how are you doing?
Doing good. I've had a quite long holiday.
Oh, okay.
I've missed a few meetings, I know. I should have reported that I wouldn't be there rather than just not showing up. And I hope you didn't get worried.
I was a little worried, but I'm glad to hear your voice again.
But I'm back now, and I should be attending all the meetings in the next good while.
Cool.
And I might actually have negotiated some time to do some Fedora work from my boss, mainly work on getting enhanced content models into the core, as I promised. I could probably round up a few weeks of work at that in the foreseeable future.
Excellent.
This was at least to some degree because the nice letter, mail that Tony sent. So thank you, Tony.
I'm glad it had a good effect.
All right. Okay, thanks, Asger. Is that all you got for now?
For now, yes. I know I have a, oh, by the way, I know I have a few minor issues assigned to me. I'll fix those or get them reassigned to someone else quite soonish. But those are minor stuff that I found here and there. It shouldn't take all of them combined to take half a day to fix. So that I can do without actually getting approved for it.
Cool. Good. Yeah. All right. Ben?
Hi. I unfortunately, in the last week, not had a lot of time for Fedora development because my job is taking up all of my attention.
Yeah.
Maybe surprisingly unrelated to Fedora stuff, but not letting me work on the service deployment business that I'd been at. I do need to, I think, schedule some time to talk to the people who are working with Chris on the broader kind of module architecture development.
I'm kind of wondering
to see how those are related.
Ben, you mentioned that before, and maybe now is a good time to decide when to do that. I know we've got a couple possible candidate special topic meetings coming up, but we don't have anything real firm. As Dan mentioned, I think a couple weeks ago, it's likely that we'll continue in this module architecture discussion as a special topic. So maybe we could just plan to do that for next week, dig into some of the technical details on that, or we could try to get folks together for a more deep discussion on that might be less interesting to the wider group, but I guess that's the reason I think maybe a separate meeting might make sense, but you know.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I could also put some initial questions out to the group just on the developers list and try and just have a conversation that way. But a lot of it is, I think, on the page I was maintaining, I put an example up of the bean configuration I was using to load up Aaron's code for model-driven triple generators, which works, but it doesn't seem like it's a tenable approach for having a number of different model-driven behaviors. So the thing that I'm kind of interested in is what's the right way in the Spring framework to indicate a number of different things to be attached to a content model URI.
Well, what do you think of, for this week, I could do tomorrow morning if that's available and just get a sense if other folks are around, this time or 2 hours earlier tomorrow. Otherwise, we may have to just schedule it offline and do a little doodle poll or something.
I'm happy to be on the talk tomorrow morning, but
all
but I don't know about the availability of the other.
Well, I'm looking at.
I'm also happy to wait for a special topic. I don't want to defer the conversation so long that it starts to impinge on the development schedule. So.
Yeah, it just occurred to me though that the doing a special topics meeting next week for this probably wouldn't be good because I'll be out for a separate meeting. A few of us will actually, so we'll have to figure out what to do about next week's meeting in general. But why don't we just start a little. Message here and get people's availability. Folks who are interested in this topic, I mean, Dan, possibly Asger, people who are mentioned on the page, I'll just email the FC Repo Committer group. And then people who are interested, sign up for the Doodle poll. And we can put together a time, either tomorrow or possibly late next week, to dig into that discussion.
That sounds fine by me. I would like to get into the discussion soon, and mailing the group is an easy way of having people say. If they didn't have the time.
Yeah. Okay.
Can I ask, this is actually a Confluence permissions favor, but I was trying to move my page from the developers forum to the new feature or the FC repo forum, and Confluence was telling me I am not allowed to delete pages in the developers forum, so I can't move to another space.
Okay. Should be able to get that fixed. The dev. Yeah, I think you have more permission on the FC repo wiki than on the dev wiki. But I think I can add that pretty quickly. I'll get that fixed in the next couple of minutes here.
Yeah, not a big deal. I just I'm gonna bring it up.
Okay. Well, thanks, Ben. Who else we got today? Aaron, got anything for us?
Hi. Unfortunately, not really this week. I was hoping to have dived into the 3.3.1 test, but I haven't had a chance to start them yet. I'd like to get a few of them knocked off this week, you know, so I know you kind of want to get that out. So.
Yeah, I was going to beg and plead during my update section. I'd really appreciate help on that.
Yeah, you know, I hope to do that probably late this week. Okay. You know, I've been sort of kind of involved with heavy ramp-up stuff as far as the data conservancy. So I think later this week should be better for me for that. At some point when we talk about topics at some point in the future, you know, I would like to still discuss data stream versioning in general, like object versioning, data stream versioning, and such, and the implications it might have on high-level storage at some point. You know, I don't think it's as high priority of a conversation as modular architecture, but I just don't want that to drop off the map at this point.
Yeah. And we also have, I think that's a real good candidate for a special topic in possibly a couple weeks or 3 weeks from now. We've also got some interest. I think, I'm not sure if you were in the meeting last week, Aaron, but Thorny mentioned he had a good discussion with some folks at VMware who are looking at using Fedora for internal use and also have some thoughts about versioning. It'd also be good to bring together folks. I know some of the folks at FitzCarlsruhe have done some heavy thinking in that area too.
Okay, yeah. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, if it would be, you know, possible to assemble, you know, those interested parties for a special topics meeting, you know, sometime, you said, like, in a couple, 3 or 4 weeks, that would be, I think that would make sense, at least for my end, you know.
Yeah. Just for 3-4, well, I guess there is, I mean, there is some feed into the high-level storage on that. I mean, we might have to guess, or, you know, I mean, to get actual action going on 3-4 development, we might not know, you know, exactly what we want long-term on the versioning stuff. But maybe working out the 3-4 specific questions for that or what the implications are would be good.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if there would necessarily be any 3-4 relevant questions, you know, on that topic. But I don't. I mean, I don't know if we'll be planning to, you know, delve into any versioning stuff with 3-4. Maybe. You know, I was kind of thinking that would sort of focus on stuff that would ultimately be relevant for 4.0. You know. Which is kind of why I was thinking that, you know, I kind of had deference to, you know, if you want to have a special topic on the module architecture, which has a lot more direct 3-4 relevance. But, you know,
yeah,
I just want to make sure that the versioning stuff didn't fall off the map. And, you started thinking about it and you know, just didn't get lost in the way of 3-4.
Okay, thanks, Aaron. Dan?
Well, same thing with Aaron. I'm just coming up for air. But on a completely side note, I do have an installation of the new Confluence, but I'm still working out the details about some configuration issues. But hopefully that will be available fairly soon. I did notice that you were out there working on the Jira 4 at some point. So I don't know if what are any thoughts about doing that in this cycle.
Yeah. I mean, I've just been thinking about Jira 4 in terms of that plugin. And it, I mean, there's nothing real specific about Jira 4 I was pining for, except for the fact that the latest version of that Agile project management plugin, Greenhopper.
Right. I agree, because that's, in theory, will do the thing that Steve was talking about earlier. But
it may allow us to do that. So I figured, you know, since the Confluence stuff is already in process, if we could ideally, you know, have that somewhat stable before doing another service update, that would be good. I like the approach that we've been following with Confluence updates of kind of keeping it, you know, keeping it running side by side if we can for a little bit. Banging on it and then switching over after some some spot checking.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, we've gotta do it that way. Especially with the amount of time that we have available to get things done. The one other thing too is that as we're doing some of this cleaning for the JIRA, it seemed to me that some of the items could logically move into the Fedora Create project because the question is whether or not we want to have any trackability for contributions that are going on that are not directly connected to the committer core, but are items of interest.
Yeah. I guess I wonder where we define whether it's appropriate to put in that tracker. Like, well, the anecdote here is that Dan and I know is I was going through the list and ran into the iRods integration with Fedora, and that work is going on, and Dan's involved in it in a separate project, but it's actually not something that's being sort of driven as a sort of Fedora core development item. So, you know, me going through that, I just said, well, close won't fix, or close, I can't remember exactly a close to that is, but, and then I put a comment in there that, you know, this work is being happening externally. But actually, we know at least someone who's involved in that work. And clearly in those cases, it seems appropriate to throw it under that tracker. I'm wondering if we just do it for everything, I guess I'd be a little concerned that it could turn into a big dumping ground that's not really managed by anybody. I mean, it seems clear to me if we know of someone who's involved in it, then if we can have a name on an item, that would be best, so things don't just get kind of orphaned and forgotten in there.
Yeah, I think that would be essential that there is a name against an item, or it shouldn't be there. And if it isn't actually being tracked or isn't active, then there's no point in having it. Some of those items, because there's no richness to the tracking, might not need to be in JIRA at all and only be tracked in the Fedora Create wiki. So I don't have a firm answer for that, but whether or not the JIRA tracker is useful for items that are active in Fedora Create.
Yeah.
But I do know that if we don't put anything out in that JIRA project, we might want to even close it off, as it just gets confusing to people. For the moment, I would request that we track these storage plugins and see, and that we consider closing out the community support area, because that's pretty much been inactive, and we haven't been leading people to it.
Yeah, and I noticed, and I agree with that. I noticed a couple items got in there over time and just went in and moved them out into the FC repo tracker because that's where they really belonged anyway. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I actually removed that from public visibility since it's just confusing. And am, as long as you're okay with it, Dan, I'd just like to remove that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
As long as there's a general consensus or no great objection.
So on the Fedora create stuff, if we've got a name associated with it, or we know of somebody who's actually, if we have a contact, for now, if you know, as we're reviewing these items for relevance to the core, prefer to move them over to create if we know the work is happening. It's just not core, as long as we've got a person associated with it.
And we'll encourage that person to update status there so the community can be informed.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Kai?
So I haven't been able to do much. Basically, I've worked on some client stuff that I'm going to reveal in a couple of weeks, I guess. And besides that, not that much. I'm going to have some time to help with the testing for 331 this week, later this week.
But yeah.
Apart from that, not much.
Excellent. Yeah, thanks for signing up on those. I guess that leaves me. And as I mentioned, I was going to beg, so I'm begging for help with the 331 testing. I set up that page and I sent out the message last week, but really what these things need at this point is a spot check. As I mentioned, most of them have been looked at already as part of the development, but just want to, you know, get a final sort of okay QA check on this stuff before packaging it up and sending it out. I mean, the good thing is we're not in a huge rush to push the 331 release out, but it would be nice to get it out pretty soon to just get it off the table and let us focus on 331. So, or 3.4, excuse me. Yeah, the other thing was I mentioned the review of the tracker items and how that's in progress. So I think we should have probably by next week gone through the first pass of that. At least I'll have gone through. I'll have a little more time this week to do some more work on that, and sounds like Steve will have some time too.
Yeah.
So that'll put us in a good position for moving forward on the next steps with 3.4. And the other thing I mentioned was, as I was going through the first quarter of these issues, I did run into a couple things that were somewhat questionable. I wasn't exactly sure what to do about them, so I just wanted to see if the group had any strong thoughts on any of these. There were just two, and I'm getting the link together for one of them. FC Repo 19. This was enable SDEP binding to a set of data streams. And when this was written, as you can imagine by the issue number, this was before we made the move to, before we really made the move to SDEPs. And there's still some old language in there around BMEX and stuff. But the idea here was, back when we had these binding keys within the digital objects to bind their data streams to the backend services that did stuff, although we had a way to define the fact that there was a set of data streams in sort of a funny way, we couldn't really use that information. And the, I guess the use case that this speaks to, I think, is around being able to develop some sort of page turning type application or something to be able to determine that there's a set of data streams that are, you know, have some similar characteristic that can be used as input to this thing. So there's, you know, zero or more or some range. So, you know, this got me thinking about two other items that are kind of in the hopper. And I wasn't quite sure what the relationship is. So one is we have the enhanced content model stuff. I know we talked about that mostly in terms of the validation at the lunch meeting. But I kind of wondered around the, you know, what the relationship here was, if the use case that this kind of speaks to is also handled
by... I'm not actually sure I understand the question.
Yeah. Okay. So is there a way with enhanced content models to define that a set of data streams is necessary to fulfill the model? A set of similar data streams. So like, you know, from zero to some number of JPEGs, for example.
No, there are not at present. We have chosen to support the optional tag, as in you can zero or one of data streams. But due to the naming convention, DS composite model must match, it must specify the exact name of the data stream. There's no real way of, in the current system, of saying you can have multiples.
Okay.
Then we might add some stuff in the future. It has been debated a little bit. But that sort of implies that that the data stream can assert its content model. So that it's not actually the name that's defining, but the assertions from the data stream. But that's not thought through.
Okay. Okay.
But still behind there is that the current service deployment mechanism, service deployment binding, was a starting point. It really was a point of exhaustion in trying to get 3.0 out, that there needs to be a much more flexible way of binding what you're using as parameters to calling the backend service and naming data streams by name is probably too constrictive in the long run. So
potentially having some sort of attribute rather than just part of the name that indicates some that they belong to a set, or
it could be there is a not necessarily an attribute, but some map of arguments being passed in to the backend service that gets that combines data stream names and user parameters being passed into the service. and that the binding is done at the moment of use.
In the case, I mean, it reminds me of the one of the patterns that emerged in using this stuff was, and I believe this was actually done by someone at UVA, was this just basically having a pretty loose binding where you don't really care what Fedora passes to you because the service itself is written in a way that that it knows what the content model is. And therefore, because it's doing callbacks to get the content anyway, it can, you know, make some subsequent requests to reflect on the object and get specifically what it needs. You know, so if the fact that it's in the book content model, you know, let's say it's a compound content model where you've got a bunch of pages in one object. If just the fact that it's in that content model means the service can make an assumption about, you know, it can say, give me the data streams that are in this object. If it's the case that it's doing some sort of callback, I guess the trickier thing is trying to have Fedora pass that in one step. And I guess this applies, well, it applies in the other piece I was going to mention is there's probably a relationship here too with some of the stuff that Ben has been thinking about in terms of how these things are invoked.
There are a number of those really early issues about SDEPs that I am a little bit inclined to make dependent on implementing a model-driven service deployment binding, and then you know, kind of addressing those possibly post-release, actually. But in particular, say like FC Repo 16, which is the SOAP SDEP bindings. I think clearly is just something that we would want to push to that later. But if we were to say that this stuff depended on those model-driven bindings, then it doesn't seem very hard to imagine a different implementation of service deployments that allowed more input farm types, which I think is something we discussed at the London meeting. But, you know, maybe instead of trying to wedge a lot of things into the core development type that we work on the framework so that people can ultimately implement more specialized types of service deployments. I mean, you know, within the existing vocabulary, I can imagine there being like data stream set input parm where, you know, you have a data stream ID name pattern or something, but it seems a little bit like that is,
I think I'm getting your point, Ben. I mean, for one, you know, the action for right now, at least, is, you know, if we think about the logical way of implementing this, I think having the model-driven service deployment implementations in place would make sense to try to sort of fit this in that worldview instead of just trying to attack it individually. That's kind of what you're saying, right?
Yeah, that's a much more succinct way to say.
I thought I was rambling, but thanks. So I'm going to just put a depends on link to FC repo 644 for now and keep that open since it sounds like, you know, it's still certainly a valuable thing to have. But there are some design decisions to be made in doing that. And those will be best made in the thinking around 6:44, more mature. Okay. Anything else on that issue? I mean, I'm happy now, just understanding the relationship to some of the more current work with this. Okay. I only have one more issue, and that was, well, for this round anyway. And that was FC Repo 100. Let me get the link here. So this is interesting. this is update object and data stream files in a transaction. So there's certainly some history behind this that several of us probably remember, but briefly, you know, we all know that Fedora's, certainly the file updates and even the database updates in Fedora aren't happening in transactions, in true transactions. Let me back up a little bit. There was some discussion quite some time ago about trying to make sure, you know, for consistency's sake in the database and all the resources that we tend to store things in, that we logically wrap everything in a transaction using XA, which is Java's two-phase commit, XA resource, which is Java's two-phase commit kind of framework. So this was, I think this was discussed just in terms of trying to make sure everything that we considered to be integral to an object and people having a guarantee that that thing has been stored, making sure that it either succeeds completely or fails completely, that it doesn't get left in a weird state. And in cases where what the repository tries to do today, because we're not wrapping these in true transactions, is it tries to correct in cases where, like, the database can't be updated for whatever reason, but the file system can, then, you know, it'll go back and remove it from the file system, or vice versa. But this is a pretty basic kind of recovery. So the idea here was to try to make that more solid. But the subject of transactions within Fedora, especially distributed transactions, really hasn't surfaced in quite some time. I think it's likely that we'll get some value out of doing transactions with the database sometime in the near future, probably as a result of some of the module work that's ongoing, just thinking about, you know, trying to make sure the updates to database for some operation happen in a transaction, in a database transaction. But it strikes me that I don't know. It just seems my first thought when I saw this was I'm not quite sure if we really want to go down the two-phase commit route inside Fedora anymore. Mainly due to the complexity and the fact that we just...
Well, everything changes with... Everything changes with Spring.
Yeah.
Everything changes with spring. And the work on the modularity, because the spring provides the container managed transactional capabilities. You can choose to use them or not. Some things are appropriate to use them with, and some things are not. But as we proceed with spring and the modularity, it's going to inform this. So, for example, if you did have a transactional file storage that you were working with, you could choose to plug that in and put that inside of your transaction boundary without a whole lot of effort or code. If you don't have a transactional file storage, which most of them aren't, then it'll have to be done with a compensation mechanism, a reliable mechanism. So, and imagine other things that get plugged in that way, the triple store or JMS. So, I think this subject is still in play, but it's going to be in play in a much more interesting and useful way.
Yeah, certainly the amount of custom code we would have to write decreases. The thing that I'm wondering is this almost seems like a step in some process to try to, you know, ultimately the, you know, the requirement is, you know, Fedora needs to be able to recover from partial, you know, one resource is able to update and another isn't, or any variety of failures it needs to be able to recover from or bring things back in a consistent state. In some cases that may, you know, we may punt and say, well, that requires some sort of manual intervention. I mean, that's sort of the high level thing. This seems like a step that presumes a particular approach to that. In other words, you know, we're not just doing transactions for transactions' sake. I guess the thing that concerns me a little about this one, I'm not so concerned about updating the database in a transaction because I think, well, that's been a solved problem. But many of the file systems that we work with are not transactional. Now, we do, with the Kubra, have a transactional layer that you can apply over any non-transactional file system. I'm just wondering, well, for one, that layer works based on using a particular database, but two, I'm kind of wondering if that's, at this point, as long as the file system itself is able to provide a consistent success or fail, an atomic guarantee that things, you know, we can have other heuristics to help recover if the database barfs on us. So, yeah, I guess I'm just kind of rambling on this. It's just not looking real concrete to me.
Yeah. Well, but the overall subject is a worthy subject, whether it changes from transactional to how to be reliable. The interesting thing is a lot of the storage systems that we're beginning to interact with are completely asynchronous to Fedora.
Yeah.
And so they have to be handled with a reliable method, which is do an action and do a compensation if it fails. not do an XA transaction. I think this is a thread on an important topic, a general topic on storage and reliability. But it's only a piece of it.
Yeah. Does anybody else have thoughts on this one?
Well, yeah, this is Aaron. So my impression of this is that, you know, I'm imagining that this, you know, these transactional concerns, you know, would be pushed down somewhere into the high level storage layer. For example, you know, if we're multiplexing,
mm-hmm.
if we're multiplexing various resources, or you know, if we're basically maintaining a stack of synchronous and asynchronous readable and writable interfaces, I mean, some of those components, you know, may want to be transactionally knowledgeable or not, but you know, I just feel that area is you know. The whole discussion is kind of going to shift to those components, you know, if high-level storage makes it in for 4.0.
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. I mean, we did touch on transactions a bit in terms of the high-level storage and just noted, yes, this is probably a place where, you know, there's some relationship or hook. But
yeah, it might change assumptions as well, like the fact that there is a registry. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily clear to me that, you know, that will be, you know, always necessary or where that would be. You know, so, I mean, I don't know, some current assumptions might change. But...
Well, Aaron, you know, I'm looking at it as it's written today, and certainly, you know, at the very least, it seems like having a relationship between this, maybe a depends relationship between this and the high level storage work, just makes sense because that it logically makes sense for us to be concentrating on the high level storage and see how this works with that. Rather than, you know, trying to attack this problem again in absence of the knowledge that we're moving that way anyway with the storage.
Right.
So, but if I do that, then I look at this again and I'm thinking, is there some requirement in this that that is actually pushing on a requirement for the high level storage, or is it too early to say that? I mean, I guess, you know, my really basic assumption is that Fedora is going to work with non-transactional stores. It's going to be capable of working with non-transactional stores. And however that's implemented, you know, ultimately, there may be a hook for whatever reason to wrap our file level storage in transactions. I'm just not clear here whether being transactional or being transaction capable is a requirement of the high level storage or whether it's like, it's agnostic or it's just too early to tell.
Go ahead, Aaron.
I was just going to say, actually, Dan, why don't you, it sounds saying something pretty insightful, so why don't you go ahead?
You're right in that it's now back into play and we need to do a lot more thinking. The thing all, with transactions is transactional with respect to what? For example, transactions with respect to JMS says that I am transactional with respect to the JMS provider, but I haven't got a clue whether it actually whether the end activity actually happened. So we may decide through Spring or what have you to talk transactionally to a storage provider deployment inside of our own system and have no bloody clue whether it's transactional with whatever it talks to.
Right. So the system as a whole isn't necessarily transactional, but, you know, point to point, we have some guarantee that, you know, the message has been sent, whether it's a true JMS message or just shooting content into some interface.
That's correct. And I'll give you an even worse case is Amazon S3. S3 is asynchronous. If you go and you send something to it and immediately ask, is it there? You will randomly get an answer. You actually have to go back and check at a later time and possibly check, have a queue of things that you check periodically until you're sure that it's actually occurred. Same thing with Honeycomb, same thing with storing into iRods or SRB. Same thing if you're going to store into a remote web DAV or store some other sort of web storage, is that you may or may not be able to truly trust in a request response manner that your storage has occurred. You know, with file systems, you get good request response, but they may not be transactional. Very few are transactional. So I think this is going to be a very interesting subject to discuss. Yeah. But it involves both the high-level storage and also the advanced service deployment work.
I hadn't yet considered the relationship between the advanced service deployment.
Well, you know, in storage, perhaps there won't be a storage plugin as it exists right now, that it will be plugged in as a service deployment to a class of things to enable a class-based storage decisions. I don't know that at this point, but those are both ideas that had been discussed in, I think, in London and some other venues.
Yeah. So that one seems less less certain. I mean, you know, it could certainly go that way, but we know at least, you know, for sure this is going to come up again in the high level storage
Absolutely.
Discussion.
Yeah.
Aaron, did you have something?
No, just that last bit of conversation just reminded me of something that was mentioned at London, where we were talking about the high level storage later and it might want to return something like some sort of ticket, which allows other processes to interact with or check with, you know, all sorts of stuff that might be happening, you know, in you know, various components in the back end. So yeah, I think I don't know. I think it'd be sort of premature to think about this issue in 3.4 scope.
Yeah,
and I think it's yeah,
certainly. But it, yeah. You know, all this discussion of the asynchronous use cases and our experience with S3 and you know, if you want end to end a guarantee that something has been stored, there are an asynchronous storage system like S3, it's a lot of extra cycles to be doing polling or you know, if the system doesn't provide a way to tell you like S3 doesn't, that the thing has completed, you know, replication to the different nodes or whatever that the, you know, by the time you get a response from it, the only guarantee is, I promise to store whatever you gave me eventually or make it available for read eventually. So it just makes me think this whole idea of end to end, you know, being able to send something in and have the guarantee that it's immediately available. There's a big cost associated with that. And it certainly makes me think that having that guarantee is not something that we should necessarily be forcing, because there's, you know, the other side of it is there's big performance benefits to not having to have that guarantee.
Well, that's why S3 is is an asynchronous store.
Yeah.
They got big scalability by forcing you to do the polling to find out when stuff has become available. I don't mean to bring up the Beeple subject, but these were issues. If you read about Beeple, these are issues in a distributed system that was meant to handle. I'm not proposing using it in any way, but it's informative to see how people build distributed reliable systems.
Yeah.
And then you dial the reliability. So you may have in your model or you may have may make no guarantee in Fedora that as something is available at a given moment and yep. simply provide an error message back.
No, I think that makes sense ultimately. I mean, to be able to have this choice, you know,
but there,
maybe on
a
per content model basis or what have you, but just being able to say, okay, I want to pay the performance penalty for the extra reliability here, but over here I don't, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Makes sense. So it leaves me with the question of what to do with this for now. So clearly this is a provocative subject. Is it best characterized in this way? I mean, there's a whole class of issues that we've kind of been dancing around with this. This provokes it, so it's, you know, if we don't do anything, at least we don't want to delete this, but maybe there's a little better way to characterize what this is all about. Is it fair to try to characterize it just under the high level storage side of things, or should we just leave it as is and link to high level storage for now?
My impression is just to leave it as is and then do the appropriate linkage
okay.
at some point.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll at least link it. But. Okay. Well, thank you guys for that discussion. It's interesting. Anything else before we wrap up for today? Okay. I'm just about to send a message out, a little doodle poll for getting together on a module architecture discussion and the relationship there between the service deployment rework. So look for that. And I haven't yet figured out what to do about next week's meeting, but I'll probably ask a few of you if you think it's worth So getting together next week, provide the necessary info to get the call recorded and such. But at least me, Dan, Aaron will be out next week. So.
Where will you be?
We're going to be in. We'll actually be in Washington D.C. There's a project that DuraSpace is involved with, the Data Conservancy, which I'm probably the worst person to give the overall view of it, but it's a very, very big, interesting project, and we're having a technical kickoff meeting to talk about it with some of the folks at Johns Hopkins University. So,
yeah,
we're keeping busy. It's an understatement, but so yeah, I mean, I've certainly, if folks feel like having a meeting next week would be a good thing to keep the momentum going, I think I'll probably ask Steve to make the call on that, and otherwise we'll talk with you, at least I'll talk with you in a couple weeks or earlier, depending on whether we have this architecture discussion fairly soon. So thanks, everybody. Appreciate the discussion.
All
right,
thanks, Chris.
Talk to you soon.
Bye. The moderator has disconnected.
Hello.
And then YouTube video.
Yeah.
The little online chatting. Yeah. Still is still really solid. Then we want to see that then. And we do some crazy form of around him, sort of build a small map code of around the whole set of around, and we only build up.
Yeah.
Or only a fancy time port, or only an entry to work for, or as on this.
Yeah.
And then we want to use some. Men så var der den slags tegninger der, så sagde de, vi er lige gode, for vi bare ser den her lille
video. Ja. Jeg skal lige, jeg så den første af dem, jeg så ikke den nummer to, det er noget, jeg ikke lige.
Det er nogen, som har besøgt
Hello?
Hi, Michelle.
Hey, sorry. Just on another call. Let me plug these in. There. Can you hear me?
We can, yes.
Good. Is everybody here?
Do we have anyone else on the call?
I know. I heard six participants, so I wasn't sure who six was. So myself, Bill, who else is here?
Carissa's on the line.
Hi, Carissa.
Hello.
Jason?
Yep.
Okay. Anyone else? Andrew?
I'm here. Yeah, so it's five.
Michael, are you there? Oh, that might be him. Who just
Hello?
Joined us?
This is Michael.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
There's Jason, Andrew, Bill, Michael, Carissa, and myself. So, Barbara, are you there? I hadn't heard from Barbara, so I'm not sure if she was making it or not.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Okay. All right, let's get started. And I'll follow up separately with Barbara because I want to talk to her about figuring out how to get some of the workflow, the image conversion workflow documented internally. But why don't we get started in any case? How's everybody doing?
Okay.
Good, good, yeah.
Good. Okay, so when we last met, we had fired off the image conversion process across the entire data set. And, you know, I think a couple of days into the process, we saw that it, because we only had one compute instance running against it, it was going to take a long time to convert all those images.
Right.
So I think the recommendation is, so what the team decided was the best thing to do in the longer term is to be able to configure multiple instances against that process so that we could speed up, you know, when doing these really big batches.
So just to plug in there, Michelle.
Yep.
There's a few ways that we can speed up the process. And so one of those ways is within the image conversion service itself to do multiple threads for doing conversions. Then the second item is to be able to run the services. In fact, run the entire your entire instance on a larger machine, so it has more compute and bandwidth availability. So those are the two that are a little bit more short term for us because they're not not too difficult to get implemented. A couple other ways we can speed things up are actually run multiple servers and also run multiple instances of the image conversion service itself on each of those servers. And those are things that are on the list. They're just not as short term.
Right.
So we'll be pushing forward on each of those, but just the first two are the ones we're likely to get to more quickly.
But I think in the meantime, while we're looking at those possibilities, I think the team thought it'd be useful for NYPL to really give us some feedback on the converted images themselves in terms of, you know, are these images what you expected based on your internal QA or QC process to make sure what we're outputting is correct.
On that note, I'm actually not able to get to our instance right now. I'm not really sure why that is. The manner I get to it when I'm offsite is a little, it's possibly fault prone. I'm using VPN with an SSH tunnel through the VPN. So VPN gets me to NYPL and then the tunnel gets me out. so maybe it's something with that, but it hasn't been a problem in the past.
You're trying it right now?
I tried it this morning.
Is the your DuraCloud instance, you mean?
Yeah, so I should maybe note that we ran up on an issue with the image conversion service. Actually ended up, it wasn't cleaning up properly after itself. So it ended up using up all the disk space on the server. So we rebooted it earlier this morning. So it may be that you were just using it. So cleared it out and then rebooted it earlier today. So you may have tried it earlier than we did that.
Oh, yeah, it works right now. Okay, I must have just caught it at the wrong time.
So within the NYPL JP2's demo 2 space, there's currently, I think, like 3,900 images. So I think
almost 4,000, yeah.
So I think what we're hoping for is that you guys can take a look at, you know, at those and at least just, yeah, do your internal checking of, you know, to make sure that the converted files are correct, at least the ones that you have there. And it seems like that's a large enough set to get a pretty good feeling for, you know, either they're being converted properly or not.
Mm-hmm. Is that process complete, or is that 3,900 got converted so far? Is it still running in the background?
No, it's not running anymore. Stopped it because we're going to have to implement one of these other methods to speed up the process. So
okay,
it didn't seem particularly useful to just have it run along slowly.
Okay,
for the next year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, you just want us to download a few samples and check them out, or do you want us to try to do something over the whole set of them?
Whatever seems most appropriate to you. You know, as far as, you know, I don't know how you would actually generally go about doing checking of, you know, JPEG 2000 converted files.
Yeah, it seems that you'd want to pick us, if you say that the set is 4,000, you'd want to pick enough of a sample size that, you know, it would be relevant.
Yeah, I guess it's whatever size you're able to look at that makes you feel comfortable that, you know, the entire set is correct.
Yeah, I mean, internally, what we typically do is stuff, and usually there's a human intervention in terms of, you know, just spot checking the individual files and then, you know, making sure that all the files actually have data in them. But we don't do anything intensive currently. But that's one thing we're in the process of changing right now. So I don't know. I guess internally I'd recommend that we ran Jove over them and then we just kind of spot checked. I don't know.
Representative sample. Do you use Jove now to like, for example, ascertain if the color space is right?
We don't do anything with Jove except for through NDMP. Our data migration process for our new storage cluster is going to build Jove in, but I don't know. It's not going to be doing anything intensive other than just validity checks. It's not going to, you know, get into the actual.
Sure. So, I mean, certainly Barbara had the concern about the color space issue.
Yeah. We could roll over all of them and make sure that they're there. I wouldn't assume that it would be partially implemented, would it?
No.
No, yeah. I mean, pretty much it's doing the same process over everything. So.
Yeah, I mean,
I think you may be cutting out.
Yeah. I think the signal's real bad.
Oh, sorry. Am I cutting out?
Yeah. Mostly gone.
Sorry about that. Hold on, let me see if I can do something about that. Just a second. Is this better? Still cutting out?
No, this is better. Let's try it.
It's better. Is it better now?
Or yeah. Intel, yeah. A little scream if something if we can't hear you. Yeah,
so
no,
Mike,
you're fine.
When you do your current, let's say, you know, you convert a bunch of images, what process do you do in-house to validate that those image conversions were correct? Do you have a process or?
It's mostly human driven and sort of optional, I guess is the short version. All we're cutting are JPEGs and GIFs right now. And if someone notices something on the front end has messed up, then, you know, we go and remediate that way. But generally speaking, it's just image magic dumping. You dump stuff into one folder, TIFF that is, and it spits out a bunch of JPEGs and GIFs, and then someone rolls over that folder to make sure they actually all have data in them. But there's nothing automated or robust, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, people take, theoretically, someone's going through and, you know, looking at like 5 or 10 images a run and making sure that the, you know, the world didn't go kablooey on them, but it's not robust enough.
Do you discover problems?
Have we discovered a problem with our images ever?
Yeah, what problems have you come across, and has it been due to the image magic server or due to something else, or?
Yeah, I mean, we've run into images that are just empty. They're just, you know, empty files. And then occasionally you'll have something where, for one reason or another, a file got cut off midstream. So you have, like, you know, 75% of the lines in the file look fine, and then it's digital noise after that, that kind of thing. It's definitely not a perfect process, and it's something we're looking to improve on. And so I'm building Jove into the data migration just so we can get a report on what we have and what doesn't validate or isn't well-formed. And then, I don't know, we're redesigning the sampling process to work with our Fedora instance. So in the long term, we're going to try to put Jove in that to make sure that we're doing the right thing. But yeah, it's going to be sort of an iterative process of fixing that, because I don't know if anyone else is really paying attention. Mostly it's, I just saw a JPEG on the website that didn't look right. And then someone makes an order to rescan it, that kind of thing.
So given that, what would you, you know, we want to, as best we can, ensure that these 4,000 meet the requirements. So what do you think that would be?
Well, I guess we'd start off by downloading the whole bucket. I'm sorry, space. I keep doing that. And running Jove over that to be sure that, you know, we can't find stuff robotically first. And then I would probably just, you know, randomly choose a selection of the files and pass them around to the head of our digital imaging unit and Barbara and possibly a few other people who might be interested to see what they think. I do have that resolver set up with Adore Jatoka and our current SAN. So we could actually start ingesting things when things smooth out a bit and see what they look like in that. But I guess in the meantime, I could also be deploying an instance of Jatoka with just a file sitting on a file system locally and have people page through that.
I mean, they could also view it through the Jatoka and DuraCloud, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true. I personally don't see very great performance because my Rube Goldberg way of accessing that. So I don't really know what an on-site NYPL person would see or how long that would take.
Yeah, the performance is pretty slow on that just because, yeah, all the files are getting shuffled between DuraCloud and the Jatoka server.
Oh, right.
Yeah, so I just wanted to know how much attention span we can expect of people who aren't really assigned to this project.
right, yeah.
We can try.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me to just have them have the files locally and test them locally, at least at this point.
Definitely there's a bunch of people waiting on JP2 locally. So I think that should garner enough interest that people will take a look. and we won't tell them it's actually because of the DuraCloud project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely the librarian in charge of digital gallery, Joe Dalton, is really waiting on that stuff.
So in order, so you don't have a Jitoka image server there now. You'd have to provision one locally. Is that right?
No, our demo Fedora server has Jitoka on it right now.
Okay.
And we can reference images on the stand via UUID. So we just have to spit out a list of UUIDs.
Okay.
Or I might end up just deploying a new version, and rather than stick these things on the SAN when we're not sure that we like them yet, just have them running from a local directory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can't help but yeah, like I guess sort of wish in the back of my mind, I hear you, talking about running Jove over these files. And obviously, we're planning, it's on our schedule to have Jove as a service that runs over DuraCloud content.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess there's really no hope in terms of having Jove, say, for example, wired up to use the store client interface or something like that.
What do you mean?
So a plugin for Jove to work with DuraCloud.
Yeah, I mean that's something that it's on the schedule. I mean, yeah, further out, and yeah. So, but when I hear you talking about using Jove against basically DuraCloud content, but DuraCloud content that's been downloaded locally, it
mm-hmm.
yeah, like
as opposed to just running it in the cloud.
Yeah, it yeah, and obviously you'll have to put energy towards that, but yeah, it's gonna. You know, Jove works best, obviously, just working locally, with a directory of files or something. I wouldn't expect that you would. What's that?
I could poke at that and see what it takes. Actually, when I've embedded Jove stuff, I've kind of fooled it into not being the inversion of control container that it is, because it doesn't usually suit what I'm doing. It has the whole... let's try to figure out what this file is when I typically know what type of file it is at the time I'm feeding it. I'm not sure what it's, if it, when it hands off to another module, you get a list of modules you can throw at your files. And I'm not really sure if each one parses the file separately as it kind of goes down the list to see what kind of file you have. And if it does do that, then that sounds like it would be kind of bandwidth intensive. If you're doing, say, 50 megabyte TIFF file, if it starts off and sees if it's an HTML file, then it sees if it's a PDF. So it could work, or it could end up being not useful to use Jove as it stands and trying to tear modules out, mm-hmm. which is what I generally do.
Yeah. Well, if you wouldn't mind, just sort of giving it a look, and seeing what, like any sort of compatibility issues that, you could, foresee in such an integration, it'd be useful, certainly.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how they're reformatting things for the new version. There's been some alphas, but I haven't really looked at them. But it might be easier to embed it in a process that actually knows a MIME type to begin with. Or, it could be kind of turned inside out, and you could say, well, this is a TIFF. See if it's a good TIFF, which is what I'm using it for.
And are you using Jove 2?
No, just Jove 1. Jove 2 isn't really production ready yet.
They didn't have an official release, though, didn't they, Michelle?
I did see Steve Abrams put out a bunch of documentation, but I don't know if it was, I think it was their first, I think, public release.
Mm.
I don't know what they claimed in terms of production ready.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely public, and they're trying to show the framework off, but the modules are totally not written yet, so there isn't really that much format support at all.
Mm.
Which, it's it's probably academic, given that they already have the Jove 1 modules, but it's just not done yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it looks like they're version 0.6. Okay.
Okay. So, I think that, you know, if you could give us a feedback on what we've converted so far, that'd be great. And we'll be working on the scaling of the process in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
How, let's see. So we've passed the end of March. How did you get your servers, and how's the whole Fedora?
We have some of the storage cluster nodes. I think we have all of our remote site nodes and like half of our main site nodes, and we have nothing else. So we don't have really anything to run Fedora on or deal with the transferring of the files. And that is kind of hung up in funding. Surprisingly, the cheaper portion of the stuff is the harder part to get the funding for. So we just had a big powwow yesterday about what stuff we needed for that. And it's ending up being actually quite a list of different hardware pieces that people need to do various bits, because we're rewriting our internal metadata authoring application too. And hopefully the stuff that involves transferring the files gets approved first so I can start on that. But we don't really have anything up yet. And, you know, some on that list of extra stuff to buy is our backup server and all that good stuff too. So we're not, unfortunately, we're not really anywhere near that being ready.
Mm-hmm. So you have a new potential date, or you're still waiting to collect all the information back?
No, I mean, the storage cluster will probably be turned up this month. But there's like a big spreadsheet of the various different pieces we need, and that's being all sent to get funded all at the same time. And I'm not really sure if they'll all be the same funding streams, because some of it's being purchased with city money still, but it's slower. I think that's the majority of our server boxes. So what I'm hoping for is that I put five really low-end one-unit boxes in there for a Hadoop server. What I'm hoping is that gets funded separately, and I'll be able to actually use that to transfer things in the meantime. Other than that, we have a VMware ESX system that has had some resources freed up on it, so we have some room to do things with that too, but it's all like, yeah, I have no idea when things are going to end up being all in-house. So I'm just sort of praying that gets done, that gets decided sooner rather than later, so we'll have actual dates for things. But I was promised this stuff would already be here, so what can you say?
Okay. Let's see. So I guess the other thing on the format conversion process review, and I think last time we talked to you, you didn't know what this was. It sounded like Barbara had it, but we wanted to try and document what the MYPL conversion process workflow is today outside of DuraCloud, so we can understand the different steps. Do you know if that exists? And if it does, who would own that?
Yeah, there's some diagrams I can forward to give a general overview. It's not anything that's particularly, it's going to have a lot more boxes than you probably need on it. And it's also not exactly the most intelligent design system. It just kind of organically grew up as part of the web publication process. So I'll just throw a paragraph in there that kind of notes what part of the diagrams are actually useful and forward that on.
Okay.
Can I suggest, Michael, that you put that on the wiki?
Sure, yeah. No problem.
Yeah,
you just even link it to that bullet.
Now, Michelle, have you spoken with Barbara lately? I mean, it seems like she's having a hard time with this time slot. I wonder if we should, you know, figure out a different slot that works.
Yeah, I did send her a message saying I hope she was going to be on the call because I wanted to talk to her about some of the, business case and process workflow stuff. But I haven't heard back, so I don't know if she's out of town. But I will set up a separate time, talk to her, and see if we need to change the meeting time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, yeah, if you could, that would be great, Michael, if you could put those on the wiki, and then we could take a look at them, maybe review them for the next meeting and try and understand what has been documented, and then we could start looking at how it compares to the DuraCloud process.
Okay.
Okay. I think if we go to the action plan review, most of the stuff we've just covered. I'm just going to take a look to be sure.
Yeah, looks like it.
So number four there, I just note that you're talking, Michael, about doing some multi-threaded use of the store client.
Mm-hmm.
Just curious if you have done anything.
No, we haven't said that yet. We would probably start doing that now.
All right.
So I'll let you know if you run into any hurdles.
Where do you keep the latest Java libraries and things like that?
Well, probably the best one to use is just the one from the last release.
Okay.
What's the version number on that?
0.2.
0.2.
Well, so the version number actually, I believe, on the file itself is 1.0.0, just because we didn't change it there.
Okay.
But if you look in the release on the release page on the wiki for 0.2, you'll be able to find that client.
Okay, great.
And then another item there was, I guess, number 7, building some kind of UI to look at JPEG 2000 images through the JPEG 2000 service. I assume that's a little bit further out. Just
yeah, I mean, that was to compare, serving it up from the cloud versus serving it from the local MYPL, I think, right?
I actually don't remember that. Is that I thought I was talking about getting Sotoka working with our SAN. Is that involved with that, or is this a separate item?
I imagine it's using the DuraCloud Jotoka and mm-hmm. and wiring into the public NYPL website eventually.
Right, that's what it was, to just compare serving it up from NYPL versus serving it from DuraCloud, how the comparisons are. But I think before we do that, we need to increase the speed that the image actually transfers. I mean, we know already it takes a while. So that's something I think is further down the line when we think the performance would be suitable. Right?
Yeah. It's hard to imagine that it would be satisfactory to just someone browsing the internet.
Right.
Yeah, maybe it'd work for an admin person internally, depending on what they were doing with it. But yeah, it's not public facing at this point, I don't think.
Right.
It might just be me, but it seems like FedoraCommons.org doesn't seem to be loading.
Yeah, so it doesn't work for me either.
Yeah, the wiki. Yeah, I just tried to get a page on it.
Yeah, so we just got a message on our side that they're having a little bit of an issue with the Apache setup just right at this moment. So it should be should be handled here quick soon.
Just to go back to the multi-threading, could you explain, is that for pulling down images to multi-thread the store client, or what's the intent of that action item there?
Yeah, that was it.
Okay. Okay. So given, you know, your workload, Michael and Jason, do you think by the time of our next call, you'd be able to at least have started that process, pulled down some files, and started the you know, review process?
When's our next call?
2 weeks.
2 weeks. That seems reasonable. Is that okay with you, Jason?
Yeah, we can get it pulled down, but who else is involved in the review process? We might need to check.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we could just pull down 10 images randomly and send them out right now and then get the rest of them. We could at least kick off the process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So just looking real quickly at the files in that space, I noticed that three of the items are small enough that it suggests that the conversion didn't happen properly. But those are the only three that I've noticed that might have any problem.
Okay.
So if you just happen to if you pull down the whole set, there's three items that are under a kilobyte, which obviously are too small to actually be.
And they're all the same size actually, 252.
Yeah, 252 bytes, actually.
Yeah, that doesn't sound right.
Yeah.
Three out of the 4,000.
Right.
Yes.
So yeah, I'm not sure what have caused that yet. Just putting a note in there as that's what I'm seeing.
Okay. Yeah, well, it'd be good to, you know, if Michael runs through the Jove tool with the process that they use in house to see what they come up with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, seems like that might be, if it's going to take a little bit of time to get, you know, the personnel to do the spot checking, if you can run the Jove tool over it or something, might be a good start.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so next on the agenda was the business case analysis, and that was really a discussion with Barbara to look at, you know, for file format transformation, for replication, what criteria they would use to evaluate DuraCloud now that we're starting to get some of the functionality up and running. So I will follow up with her on that. Do you guys want to give a quick update on the development?
Sure. You want to take a shot at that,
sure.
Bill?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, there's really been a focus on two main items. On our side, and one of those has been Andrew's focus on looking at the security aspects to you know, essentially just making it possible for each of our main applications to be covered with essentially Spring security. And so essentially where that is now is that the each of those applications now requires you to do a login, and of course if you're going through the REST APIs, you'll have to send authentication headers as well. And I think each of the services has also been converted to handle security. There's one small issue at this point, and that is in regard to the image conversion. The JPEG 2000 server service, and that is that because we don't have real direct control over the calls being made by Jitoka, it's not really able to log in order to or pass, you know, the authentication header in order to get into the spaces when they're closed. So if the space is open, so the content is available for you know, anyone to see without having to do any kind of login, then there's no problem. And so that's just a note. We're trying to figure out, you know, what are appropriate kinds of ways to maybe handle this. But that's the situation at the moment there. And my focus has been on the synchronization tool, which will essentially allow you to, it's just a command line tool, which allows you to point it at a set of directories, and it'll push those files up to DuraCloud, and then monitor those directories for changes in order to keep things in sync. And you know, that was primarily being written in order to help us with integrations on the Fedora and other applications that we don't necessarily want to have to write a specific or a special adapter for. But this way, we can just use this tool to, you know, monitor the file system that sits underneath these other applications and do backups of the content that they're working with. And that's currently under just sort of the first round of internal testing. And so it's progress has been made, and it's moving along. That's all.
Yep, sounds right.
Well, and the other big thing is the synchronization tool.
Yeah, that's the tool I was speaking about.
Oh, I thought you were talking about the security piece of it.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems like those are the two main items.
Did you want to talk about just sort of the rethinking and of the schedule and sort of how that's adjusted over the last week or so, Michelle?
You're talking to me.
Yes.
Yeah. So the just so that you guys know, initially we were going to bring on 10 to 15 new pilot partners, mainly for the testing of the integration with DSpace and Fedora in the next month. But we've decided to change that course slightly because it was going to butt up against the summer, and we didn't want to have inconclusive participation from the pilot partners just because we were going into vacation time and summertime. And also we wanted to make sure that what we released was feature-rich in terms of what this next group would see. So we've decided to change the plan a little bit and focus instead on making sure we build out the features we've committed to, and also to make the platform open source sooner versus later. So originally we were going to make the platform open source in September, October. Now we're going to make the platform open source in time for the big open repositories conference that we participated in July. And the reason for doing that is to hopefully engage with some of our pilot partners in more integrated development of some tools and applications that they have interest in, as well as integration with other platforms that they might be using, as well as just internal use of DuraCloud. So that's a little bit of a change from the last time I talked. So what that means for NYPL is that, you know, I'll be talking to Barbara to figure out, because it's going to push out the production service from where we initially thought, to see how NYPL wants to continue their participation in the pilot, kind of beyond what the initial scope was, which would mean over the summer and really into the fall. Questions on that piece? Can't hear you. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
We're all here.
No questions for me, Michelle.
I can't. Jason and Michael, are you there?
Yep. Nope. Yeah, we're definitely here.
Okay, I can hardly hear you. So do you guys have any questions on that part?
No, not really.
Okay.
Do you have a list of the pilot partners, the new ones yet?
Yeah, I do. I need to publish that. Well, we haven't sent out, I'm still not, I've got my last set of calls this week, so I still don't have, you know, all the MOUs and stuff signed, but I will publish a list of all the folks that have agreed to be in the pilot. But it's really a preliminary list.
Okay.
But we'll probably, even though many of them won't come on board till September, it looks like we'll be working closely with MIT and PEI, yeah, beforehand, because they want to get involved in some of the integrations and the development. And I also want to talk, I do want to talk to CDL, particularly Steve Abrams, about the Jove tool, because they had expressed interest of incorporating some of their tools as well. So it seems like there might be a good fit between your use case and integration of Jove and DuraCloud. So it's also a possibility.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So that's, I think, all that I had. Anybody have anything else they want to add? Comment?
I don't think so.
And nothing else from me.
Yep. No.
Okay. Carissa?
I'm good.
You're good? Okay. All right. Well, thank you guys. And we'll talk to you again in 2 weeks. And if anything, obviously, if you get stuck or anything comes up in the meantime, please let us know.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
Right. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.